Hello, and welcome to show number 2528 of Eyes on Success, a weekly program empowering the visually impaired with expert advice, personal stories, and the latest in technology and accessibility. I'm Nancy Goodman Torpy.
And I'm Pete Torpy. No, your sound system is not broken, and it's not an emergency alert from the nation's alert system. That was Morse code for the words Eyes on Success, because we'll be talking about ham radio today.
We'll talk with retired attorney and ham radio enthusiast John McCann, call sign KW4U, about his experiences as a blind operator since the 1960s, how modern equipment provides good accessibility, and why this hobby is a fantastic way to make new friends and serve as a vital emergency communication backup. Ham radio is a very popular hobby among people with vision loss, and of course, we've spoken about it before, but the most recent show that we devoted to ham radio was almost 7 years ago, so we figured it was about time for a new one. But before we start this show, here's our tip of the week from John McCann.
Life has so many opportunities. I've heard the phrase bored in retirement, and I just can't get my head around that. It absolutely doesn't register. I was privileged to have had a good career. I'm comfortable in retirement. So find your passion and find a way to pursue it, no matter what it is. If it's playing a mandolin in a bluegrass band, amateur radio, blindness consumer activism in whichever organization. I obviously have a preference for the American Council, and I won't have the Council versus Federation debate here, but find something that fulfills you and pursue it. And if blindness presents challenges, talk to other blind people who've gone there before, or be the pioneer who breaks down the barriers that you confront. There'll be barriers there, but 70 and a half years of life has told me that in just about every circumstance, where there's a will, there's a way.
Absolutely. And one of the things we find this is so nice about being retired is if you try something and you like it, you can keep it going. We've been doing this podcast for 14 and a half years, but if there's something you get involved in that just for one reason or another doesn't work for you, that's okay. You stop doing that, you find something else, and you can have a fulfilling life in retirement without a paid job.
Yeah, it is nice when there's no longer a nexus between what you do and then any kind of need to do it because you have to pay the mortgage or put food on the table.
Support for Eyes on Success is provided by
First Aid for the Blind, teaching blind and vision-impaired clients important life skills through live video training from blind instructors. The purpose of FAFTB's training is to replace the fear of the unknown with feelings of hope and confidence. More information is at FAFTB.com.
And by
Biped AI, the manufacturer of NOAA, an all-in-one mobility vest. NOAA provides GPS navigation, detects obstacles, and describes surroundings using cameras and AI. Available through many distributors. More information is available at biped.ai.
You are listening to Eyes on Success. 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 Success.
Let's start by meeting John.
Today's guest has been on the show ages ago, and we thought we'd have him back again today. Last time he was on the show, we talked about his life as an attorney, but this week we'll be talking about something entirely different. So, John, maybe you can tell people who you are and what you're doing these days.
My name is John McCann. Since we're talking about amateur radio, my call sign is KW4U. I think that's a very cool call. Well, I was born in New York City in 1954, graduated Harvard Law in 1980, worked most of my career with the federal government, and most of that was with Social Security. I was the commissioner of the Virginia State Agency for the Blind from 1986 to 89. It was a political appointment, and did work for the feds in healthcare law, and then with an organization called the Affiliated Leadership League of and for the Blind. That was from late 84 to 86. As I say, most of my federal service was with the Social Security Administration doing, well, most of it was durable medical equipment. And then near the end, I was clerk to a stable of administrative law judges doing disability work, as I say. I retired on July 31st, 2014. I moved a year later. It took a little while to make this happen, but in June, in fact, this is the 10th year anniversary of my moving to Tucson, and I've been happily retired since August 1 of 2014. We're coming up on 11 years of retirement, 10 of those years spent here in Tucson, where I am rather involved with the American Council of the Blind. I'm chair of the Constitution and Bylaws Committee. I did serve on the board from 2012 to 2019, and I enjoy doing leisure reading, ACB, and ham radio.
So that is a long and worthwhile career followed by a lot of volunteer work. But I understand, Peter and John, that you two met even longer ago.
Well, Peter told me that he went to Lowell School for the Blind, and I'm embarrassed to say that I don't remember him being there. Maybe I shouldn't admit that, but you would have only been 2 years ahead of me.
It certainly was a long time ago, but I do have some fond memories of being there.
Support for Eyes on Success comes from our listeners and corporate sponsors.
For more information about airing promotional items on the show, send an email to hosts@eyesonsuccess.net.
This week's focus topic is amateur radio, or ham radio, as it is frequently called, and how blind people can easily participate in the hobby, especially now that modern equipment provides good accessibility.
Well, John, just to make sure we're all on the same page here, maybe you can start out by telling our listeners a little bit about ham radio and what it is.
Okay, ham radio is a licensed service. It requires a license from the FCC. There are currently three classes of license: technician, general, and extra. I have my extra class license and have had that since April of 1980. And it's interesting that we're talking about schools for the blind. In the whole school for the blind subculture, and I went to Lavelle, albeit as a day student, the population density in New York being what it was, there were actually two schools for the blind in the New York City area, the New York Institute for the Education of the Blind, as it was then called, and Lavelle. And the Institute had a ham station. Lavelle did not, or was beginning to have one at the time I graduated. But that was where you heard about a lot of blind people who had become amateur radio operators or who were studying for their amateur radio license. I remember it was December of 1966 when I went to the library on the school premises at Lavelle and picked up a copy of Make Radio Your Hobby by a Fred Stein. And this guy was, I think he wrote the book around 1940. And I think he was visually impaired. And this book was available in Braille. I don't even know if it was available in print. But I read Make Radio Your Hobby in December 66. I was a 12-year-old. And it was then that I decided, yeah, I was going to get my amateur radio license. And I did get my novice license. That class no longer exists. But I did first acquire my novice license in March of 1969. It was WN2IXM. At that time, the novice class license was for 2 years, and you either had to graduate up from that license or you were out. It was up or out. And in 1971, what discretionary income I had was all going toward guitars, amplifiers, etc. And I figured, okay, I've got college on the horizon. I thought I'd be going away to college, which is ultimately what I did. So I decided to put my interest in amateur radio in mothballs until the summer between my second and third years of law school. I figured my life would stabilize after I graduated law school, and I knew that I would still enjoy the hobby. So I sort of sprinted from the novice class up to the extra class in about 7 months.
Technically, ham radio allows licensed individuals to communicate with each other using radio frequencies for personal, non-commercial purposes. It involves using a variety of radio technologies to connect with other enthusiasts locally or across the world and even into space, all without the need or use of the internet or cell phones, although, as John says, sometimes you can combine the various technologies.
So for all those years in between when you first learned about ham radio, you actually didn't work a ham radio setup. You just read about it and knew about it.
I read about it. I acquired a license. I think there was an idea that the New York Lighthouse for the Blind was going to create a recreational amateur radio station, have a club station at the New York Lighthouse. That never happened. So you are correct. I had the license WN2IXM, but never really got on the air with it.
Did you know any other people that were doing ham radio at the time? Any of your friends?
Oh, sure. Well, Jeff Bennett was there, WA2AIB, Don Breda, who had graduated from Laval the year before me and went to the Institute. He's WA2IWC. Steve Matsura, WB2KTV. Music took a priority at that time in my life. There wasn't money for both music and amateur radio.
You said you got your first license like 45 years ago or something?
Yeah, 56 now, I guess. Yeah.
Long time ago. And I assume that back then everything was knobs and dials. And these days, most current setups are visual screens. How has that impacted the ability of the blind to participate in this?
Well, you're 100% right. Even though the equipment back in the late 60s and early 70s had knobs and you didn't have touch screens, but you did have meters that you needed to read. So blind people had developed what they call gimmicks that had audio tones, which could tell you when your plate current was maximized, etc. A big aid to the blind amateur radio community at that time was Braille Technical Press. It was a magazine that existed from March of 1950 to June of 1973. It was put out by Bob Gunderson, who was an instructor at the New York Institute. He was W2JIO, and he's long since passed away. But Bob Gunderson was instrumental in making amateur radio accessible to the blind. Now, you talk about today's equipment. Kenwood has been very, very good about having speech available on its transceivers, albeit that usually has occurred courtesy of a voice chip that you have to install. You'd buy it off the shelf without that speech chip, and it would be as accessible as it can be made to be by putting in, depending on the receiver, either the VS1 or the VS3 voice chip. And Kenwood is coming out with a new VHF-UHF transceiver, the TMV750, which is going to have a speech built in, a tri-band VHF-UHF unit. So Kenwood's done very well in having radios with speech output. Yaesu, we've never been able to interest them in that. A lot of the Chinese handhelds that are fairly inexpensive, in fact, they're very inexpensive, although they may be less so with the tariffs, I don't know. I have several Chinese handheld radios where speech is incorporated from the get-go.
So things have changed quite a bit in terms of accessibility of this equipment.
Yes, they have. We still have, you know, things that we can't use, like waterfall displays, and I won't get too heavily into that. But there are still challenges in amateur radio, but you can still enjoy the hobby. I mean, I do, and I have no usable vision whatsoever.
Now, I guess in terms of having accessible equipment, that's one thing, but you also need to install antennas, and there's more to it than just buying a piece of equipment.
That's true. Funny you should mention that, because I've been here 10 years, as I mentioned, and I've not yet set up an antenna for an HF station. About 9 years ago, I bought a Kenwood unit for the high frequencies, which would require an outside antenna. And that thing's basically still in the box, just life has gotten in the way. All of the work I'm doing now is on the VHF frequencies and UHF frequencies with internet conductivity. And some people philosophically will say that that's not amateur radio, but there is a internet backbone that enables you to use VHF and UHF for global communications.
Oh, so the internet gets you across the ocean and then you use someone else's tower on the other side of the ocean? Is that the idea?
Well, you can operate stations remotely. You can access some remote base stations. But what the idea here is, I take a radio. The radio transmits to what's called a node package. Well, a node. How do I say this? I have a device called a clear node. It's a dedicated Linux computer, a Raspberry Pi Linux computer, and it also has a very, very tiny radio module in it. So I can walk around my property with a handheld radio. I transmit to the clear node. The clear node takes my transmission, converts it, sends the transmission to the Linux computer, which digitizes it and sends it out over the internet. And then the reverse process occurs at the other end. People who are tuned into that node will go through the reverse process.
Oh, so that's interesting. This isn't all radio signals these days.
No, it's radio to your node, the node to the internet, internet back to a node out to another receiver.
Back in the day, ham radio was well known as a communications system that could be used in the event of a major emergency. But with it now being this multimodal system where you're using the internet for part of it, is that still true?
Yes, that is still true, because no one has taken HF away. But you make a very good point, because as much as I enjoy using the clear node, if the attack to the infrastructure or if the breakdown in the infrastructure involves the internet in the area that's experiencing the hurricane, et cetera, then that protocol that I just described is not going to be effective. So nothing is, and God forbid anything ever should, take away direct point-to-point, i.e. no internet involvement, HF communication. By HF, I mean high frequencies. And that's where I'm talking about the rig that I have not yet set up here on my premises. We did build a rather substantial storage shed in late 2022. And a corner of that has been dedicated to my ham shack. And this is the year I pledge to actually get that station up and running, get an antenna panel so that I can, you know, get the wires to the antenna to go through the walls of the shed and out to an antenna. Once I get that set up, the internet has no involvement there.
Presumably, you can connect with people all over the world. Who, in fact, do you talk to these days and connect with, and where are some of these people?
Well, I sometimes will check into the Blind Hams Net, and there are people from Switzerland, the UK, some people from Europe check in there. One of these hubs that I'm talking about that's held twice here in Arizona, it's the 60s Pop Rock and TV Trivia Net. It's hosted by my friend John Timmons, N7LQR.
It sounds like there are special interest groups in this ham radio network, just like there is on the internet.
Exactly.
So you would still, under certain circumstances, use Morse code instead of speech?
You could. Morse code will oftentimes get through when speech won't. And what I'm very gratified by, since I came up in the era where knowledge of Morse code was required. As a matter of fact, when I got my extra class license, I was required to demonstrate proficiency with Morse code at the 20 words per minute. Now, the code requirement hasn't been in effect for perhaps 30 years or so, but I'm intrigued by the number of people who still want to learn it and the number of people who still do use it. And when I get my HF station set up, I would say at least half of my operating is going to be with Morse code. I still think it's a fun way to communicate.
John talked about using Morse code, and you heard a little bit of Morse code at the very beginning of this episode, but here's what Morse code really is. It's a telecommunications method that encodes text characters as a standardized sequences of short and long tones, known as dots and dashes, or alternately as dits and dahs. Much as Braille is an alphabet consisting of patterns of raised dots. Morse code was initially developed for use with telegraph systems and is named after Samuel Morse, one of the inventors. Now, probably the most famous Morse code signal is SOS, and here's what that sounds like in Morse code. As you heard, that was three short tones for S, three long tones for O, and three short tones for S. So let me play that once again. There are, of course, S's and O's in Eyes on Success, so I'm going to play the bit of Morse code that we played at the very beginning of the show, which is Eyes on Success, and you should be able to recognize the three short tones for each S and the three long tones for the O. Apparently, once people get facile with using Morse code, they can have entire conversations that way, and more power to them. It's got to be a challenge to learn. Back to our conversation with John.
If you were to give a presentation to a group of people who knew nothing about ham radio, what would be the pitch you would give to them to get involved in ham radio and the enjoyment you get out of it?
You can make new friends. I enjoy participating in the net, which will be tonight and tomorrow night. It harkens back to when I first got my license. There was a certain romance in being able to take components, a so-called junk box full of components, and put a simple Morse code transmitter together, and even a long wire with a tuner and a key. And just tapping on a key with something you put together almost with spit and baling wire, be able to communicate around the world. There was a certain romance to that. And today, no one does a lot of home brewing today. But just the idea of being able to walk out, fire up a transmitter, open and close a key and transmit with people around the world or speak to people around the world and just make new friends and see what interests you may or may not have in common. It's just another string to your bow. A lot of people will say that, well, why would I bother when there's the internet and when there's a cell phone, I can talk to somebody in Australia, full quieting. And that's true. But thank God people are still interested in amateur radio, because what if, you know, if the cell towers go down, if the internet goes down, if you have an emergency source of power and an HF transmitter, that could be your only link. And I'm not, a survivalist. I'm not trying to look at it from that perspective, but it's nice to have that string to my bow.
You mentioned that you are particularly fond of your call sign, although it was assigned to you, presumably at random. What is special about your call sign?
I got my license in the mail. It was KW4U. Now, the beauty of 4 is that it acts as a preposition, and KW means kilowatt. So kilowatt for you. I mean, can you think of a more tasteful license? KW for you? I'll never change that.
Well, I want to thank our guest, KW4U, for an interesting discussion about ham radio and a little bit about its history. Thanks again.
You are listening to Eyes on Success. 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 Success.
Now for this week's final item, how to learn more about ham radio or amateur radio and how to contact John McCann.
John, if people had questions for you, is there some way they could contact you?
Oh, for sure. Just reach out to me via email. I'm John, J-O-H-N, at JAMSITE. That's J-A-M as in Michael, S-I-T-E .net. I've got my own domain. So you think of website, you substitute my initials, J-A-M. If you want to think of it music, that also works. Nice double entendre since I am a musician as well, guitarist, mandolinist. John at jamsite.net. You can always reach me by email at that address.
And if somebody is a ham operator themselves, your call sign again?
Is KW4U, King William 4 Uniform. I am on QRZ, although that's not the most friendly site. But if they want to look me up, you type that. You can go to the ACB's Uniform Licensing System database and type that call sign in. And, you know, licenses are a matter of public record, so you could get a lot of information about me that way also.
Do you have a social media presence?
I'm on Mastodon. I don't bother with X. I'm on Facebook. If you search for me, you know, John McCann in Tucson.
What resources would you recommend for people with vision loss who are interested in getting involved in ham radio?
Anyone interested in amateur radio should be aware of the Blind Hams Net, and I'll get you their information.
Great. Are there any other umbrella organizations who you would cite as a useful resource?
Both the Federation and the Council have amateur radio either affiliates or divisions. The terminology is different between the two organizations. So, but anyone who has an affiliation with or is tight with either one of those organizations should go to the leadership of that organization and ask, in the case of the Federation, it would be the HAMS division, Blind HAMS division. And in the case of the American Council of the Blind, which I can speak to, it's ACB Radio Amateurs.
Of course, you can find all of that information in the show notes for episode 2528, which is this episode, at our website, www.eyesonsuccess.net. We'll also have links to three prior episodes we did about ham radio in the show notes, or you can put ham in the search field on our website and find those shows yourself.
That's it for today's show. Next week on Eyes on Success, we'll talk about using Braille and technology to empower blind students. We'll talk with Jose Manolo Alvarez, a blind professor at the University of Puerto Rico, who teaches future educators of the visually impaired and creates tools from hurricane trackers to games to make assistive technology more accessible and engaging for students.
This is Pete and Nancy signing off for now, and we hope to catch you again next week.
You've been listening to Eyes on Success, hosted and produced by Nancy Goodman-Torpy and Peter Torpy.
You can access the full archive of previous shows, subscribe to the podcast, and much more by going to our website, www.eyesonsuccess.net. If you have questions about anything you've heard on the show or have suggestions for future shows, send an email to hosts@eyesonsuccess.net.
Thank you for listening and have a nice day.